Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
And so right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn how the rich want to keep you dumb. Well, how dumb? We're going to go on the street and just ask simple questions that everyone from my generation would have been able to answer, but today, not so much. That then will lead us into when people take a knee because they're protesting the history of slavery and subjugation. I support that. But those who are angry about it, I would like for them to take this short little 3-minute clip that I'm going to do and send it, please, to Laura Ingram, Sean Hannity. Send it to everyone like Rush Limbaugh and ask them would they watch it and respond. I think you'll find it a real eye-opener. Also, a medical doctor, an orthodox medical doctor, not a holistic doctor by any means, and a very big believer in vaccines, he still says that in his 27 years as a pediatrician, he sees that there has been no real science on vaccines taught to other pediatricians. Why? Because the science doesn't exist. Hold on a second. The CDC just added 3 more vaccines to the schedule. Surely there's abundant science backing it up. No, there's not. We'll show you that. And, of course, the latest on health and healing. We're going to begin by going just a little deeper into a series of studies. There are over 22,000 studies on PubMed involving cannabis and the cannabinoids and the healing capacity of those. I recommend the cannabinoid oil for people with autism, multiple sclerosis, ALS, and also Parkinson's, and ADHD, also lung cancer, and immune dysregulation. There was a study, a major study, with 2,736 patients, and at the inception of the medical cannabis treatment, which lasted 33 months, there was ongoing evaluations, and here's what they concluded. Now, what's important about what I'm going to tell you is there's no medication that could duplicate this. That they had a 66.6% reduction in pain. There was a 60.8% reduction in cancer. They had 94% reported an improved overall condition and 50% reported continuous reduction in pain. 60% reported improved quality of life from bad or very bad to good or very good. 70% reported moderate to significant improvements in their condition, and 20% of respondents stopped using opiates altogether or reduced their dose. So notably, the most common side effect reported was mild dizziness, but only 9%, and dry mouth, just 7%, and that reversed itself very quickly. But when you're dealing with chronic pain, you're dealing with either the first or second most common reason people see a physician in the United States, pain and fatigue. Those are the number one and number two. So chronic pain is a problem that affects at least 100 million Americans, and it is also one of the most significant public health problems in the United States. It costs us about $600 billion a year, an amount equal to about $2,000 for every person living in the United States. Meanwhile, the nation's growing opiate epidemic sees one of every 550 chronic opiate users dying within 3 years of their first opiate prescription. That's a very high percentage. In fact, this year, more Americans will die from taking opiates, and I'm talking about through prescriptions by their doctors, than all car accidents, all gun fatalities in the United States. So it's a big deal. And there's been several meta-analysis. A meta, M-E-T-A, analysis means many. And they studied neuropathy, found that in patients, and found that the cannabinoids, particularly selected isolates of the cannabinoids, can provide analgesic benefit in patients with chronic neuropathy. Diabetic neuropathy is very big, and as a result, this is a safe, very effective way of helping the body. And yet we have a whole segment of our population, religious fundamentalist. We have the most of the Republicans, the president, and we have a lot of people in the media who do not support not just the use, medical use of marijuana and the opiates, but really full-out research. Though we have 22,000 studies just in our own PubMed, where we can start clinical trials across the board with at least 50 different conditions. That's where we should be putting our money in research. Now, mark my words, the moment that Monsanto and other companies get their patents on medical marijuana, watch how quickly the legislation changes. That's how powerful they have. I mentioned the other day that hemp shows potential for treating ovarian cancer. That was from Sullivan University College of Pharmacy. So we should do far more in this area, but we can't do it as long as we have this biased mindset that somehow people using cannabis are using it as a gateway drug. No, the gateway drug in the United States is alcohol. Separately from Loma Linda University, they're doing good work out there on nuts and the cardiovascular system. There is compelling evidence showing that nut intake confers protection against cardiovascular disease. They reviewed the literature with respect to observational studies and randomized trials completed in the last 25 years that examined whether it's walnuts or almonds or any nut and cardiovascular disease endpoints. The conclusions from these findings are that if you're eating the nuts, you're protecting your heart. I suggest a handful of different nuts each day. Maybe Monday you have almonds, Tuesday walnuts, Wednesday pine nuts. But get all the different variety, including macadamia nuts, into your system. The scientific evidence is really strong. Remember, you're getting a lot of the unsaturated fatty acids, L-arginine, which is very beneficial for blood flow. You're getting phenolic compounds and phytosterols. All of that is good for your heart. Also from Andrews University, researchers have demonstrated that a program aimed at helping people modify lifestyle factors such as diet and exercise is, listen carefully, quote, as effective as medication at reducing blood pressure. When people come to see me and they have blood pressure or diabetes and they've been on 1, 2, 3, 4 medications and they're still having problems, I ask them, did your physician suggest diet? No, just eat everything in moderation. I said, well, you just use common sense. If I said you have a choice here, arsenic and mercury, a teaspoon of each, both will kill you, which one would you choose? Well, I wouldn't choose either. Well, then look at the standard American diet. In the end, it's going to do the same thing that mercury or arsenic is going to do. It's going to poison your cells, causing massive inflammation throughout your entire body. And in time, though nobody knows which day that will be, you're going to have a system collapse. I said, so why not choose things that are not inflammatory? And generally within 2 to 3 weeks, their blood pressure is normal and their blood sugar is normal. But now this research is showing that just doing what I said from the Weimar Institute and New Start Lifestyle Program, in 14 days, they were able to do this. 19 points, they dropped their blood pressure. That's substantial. By adapting selective lifestyle health principles, half of the people in our study achieved normal blood pressure within 2 weeks while avoiding the side effects and costs associated with blood pressure medications, end quote. And that was from a Dr. Alfredo Mejia, associate professor at Andrews University. So it's just a matter of a plant-based diet, lots of fruits and vegetables, and all the good oils. Olive oil is good, macadamia oil, coconut oil, flaxseed oil. That's what helps you. For those of you who suffer from erectile dysfunction, this is according to Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. Quote, erectile dysfunction means increased risk of heart disease regardless of other risk factors. Well, that's not good. Why? Because erectile dysfunction indicates greater cardiovascular risk. For example, if you have elevated cholesterol or you've been smoking or you have high blood pressure, those are secondary to the fact that you're not getting the blood into your reproductive system. They studied 1,900 men over 4 years, and those who had erectile dysfunction were twice as likely to experience heart attacks, cardiovascular arrest, sudden cardiac death, and fatal or non-fatal strokes. So the findings, the research team says, suggest that erectile dysfunction is an important telltale sign that you have cardiovascular risk. So what can we do? What's the good news in this? Well, there's several things. One is that there's no reason that we can't improve our circulation. Nitric oxide is one of the answers to that. Nitric oxide you can get by having a glass of beet juice. There are several different foods that increase it. I would start using more chlorella, spirulina, wheatgrass juice. Also, cabbage in the cruciferous family is good. The nutrients, always good would be vitamin E and choline, because you need an impulse from the brain to the reproductive system, and choline provides that, about 1,000 milligrams. And then with L-arginine at about 1,000 milligrams, and with nitric oxide increasing, then you have your blood flow. So that helps you and opens up your arteries. Then if you take pomegranate juice or concentrate, or even the pomegranate capsules with a liquid inside, 3 of those capsules per day, or a tablespoon of pomegranate concentrate also helps repair the inner lining of your both veins and arteries. And that's good too. Ohio State University had a study that talked about chronic diseases like cancer and autoimmune disorders and obesity may ultimately vanish if we really changed our diet and lifestyle. But if not, then it's going to vanquish the efforts of medical intervention unless we change our diet. Either way, according to Professor Matt Orr, assistant professor in the College of Science, he calls it restoration ecology. That's good. What he's really doing is he's showing how you can, with a healthy diet, you have to look at your body as an ecosystem. Well, part of the ecosystem is the trillions of bacteria in your body, and you want to get good bacteria. You get good bacteria from good food. Good bacteria from good food means good biological processes. And that, in effect, helps fight chronic disease and where you get the bad bacteria. So something that doctors are pulling together, but for all of you who've come to health retreats and health support groups over the decades, you know how good you feel after 1 or 2 weeks, because what you're doing is the same thing he's suggesting, it's just more intense. Why is it more intense? Back when I was in my early 20s, I sponsored a symposium all day at the Waldorf Astoria. I invited the people who had actually invented different supplements and done the most research, like vitamin E, the research. No one in the world had done as much research as the Shute brothers in Canada. Linus Pauling on vitamin C. There were about 14 presenters. It was packed. And the most impressive of all of them was the Shute brothers, because he had all these slide presentation of ulcers, gangrene, before using vitamin C topically, opening up the capsules and putting the oil on, but taking internally at very high doses. And they had written all these monographs on them. Now, here's the problem. If you went to the American scientific literature, you wouldn't find any studies showing the benefits of vitamin E because it was too low a potency. In fact, it would be another 15 years before I began to see studies where there were some remarkable improvements in people's health using vitamin E, but they started at 400 units, 600 units. And by the time another 20 years went by, when they were up to 1,000 units, they were getting phenomenal results. So you see, potency does make a difference. Another thing, I don't have time today, but tomorrow I'm going to invite the last surviving member of the Institute of Applied Biology's research team on the air. I hadn't spoken with this person in a long time, and just about 4 months ago, bumped into her on the street. She's been at the Institute for 48 years. I was there 33 years. And she'll have, I don't know what she's going to say, but she'll have some interesting comments, especially since I was the youngest scientist at the Institute. But I did something that they didn't believe in. I was explaining a theoretical or a hypothesis that if you look at how much vitamin C a goat manufactures in a day, based upon weighing about 20 pounds, and we're talking about a goat that is out eating, foraging, healthy food, no garbage, no refined carbohydrates and sugars and soft drinks, it's about almost 40,000 milligrams. So then what would a 180-pound man who is under stress, not always eating right, how much would they realistically need, not just to prevent scurvy or subclinical vitamin C deficiency, but to be optimally stimulating their immune system? Well, they were so against nutrition there that their animus towards me was palpable. I was lucky if I ever even got a hello. Now imagine that these are some very bright people who came from the best schools, and but they were looking for the answer that would win them the Nobel Prize. Lots of arrogance, lots of conceit, no humility. And in the process, I began to work with some patients at Trafalgar Hospital. And the director of the Institute, a medical doctor, he was the one overseeing it. And one day I said, I believe that these people with cancer are also suffering from substantial nutrient deficiencies that they're never tested for, especially vitamin C. Would you do something simple? Would you take some of your terminal patients? There were 10 that were terminal in the ward. And I said, since they're already dying and will die, and there's nothing that anyone can do in the hospital to help them, they've done everything they can, it hasn't worked. Why not try this? Increase the amount of vitamin C every 2 days by 10,000 milligrams in buffered form, intravenous. And he did. And we had remarkable results. So much so that at the end of about a year, 7 of the 10 people were alive, in remission, and healthy. One of them was my editor at my publishing company, who I didn't even know had cancer. In any case, that was the beginning of how I began to create my protocol called the Laws of Compensation. And what the Law of Compensation means is, to the degree that you have any deficiency or anything, whether it's genetic or trauma, bacterial, viral, some form of malnutrition, whatever it is that's caused imbalance, to reharmonize the energy, you have to exceed the energy of the dominant disease-producing, force in the body. And to do that, you have to give much more. Hence, I get about 13 to 15 glasses of fresh organic different juices each day as one part of a healthy diet. And then you start to see people really make changes. But it was in the vitamin C that the biggest differential occurred. And that's where I used it on myself before I advocated it for anyone else. I spoke with Dr. Fred Klinner down in Reidsville, North Carolina. He had used the most vitamin C of any practicing physician in America that I could find in the scientific literature. He actually went up to 50,000 milligrams. Normally he used 25. And he was telling me the good results he was getting. So I decided to go up and up and up and up until finally I was at 200,000 milligrams every day, 6 days a week for 1 year. I had my blood tested every single week to see what was it doing for someone who's never smoked or drank or taken drugs or harmed their body. What would it do to an ideally healthy person? And then I could get some perspective, like the rules of homeopathy. What would it do for a sick person? And that's how I created the formula that we reversed completely, totally, 100% full-blown AIDS in 8 people, because there were 12 who agreed out of 1,200 to go into this advanced study at the Tri-State Healing Center. But 8 of them actually completed the 16 months. All 8 were completely reversed in their cancer, or their AIDS-defining illness. Kaposi's sarcoma, pneumocystis, cranial pneumonia, thrush, wasting, everything changed. They were ideally healthy. Now, wouldn't you know it, it would not be anyone in the Caucasian community that would pay attention, come to a press conference. The doors were always open. The medical staff, the nursing staff, all the therapists were always open to communicating, having anyone come. And the only people who came were African Americans, whether it was Arthur Ashe or Stokely Carmichael or Bill Tatum, publisher of the Amsterdam News, Tony Brown of Tony Brown's Journal staff. And they are the ones who then began to see the greatest treatment reversals in African Americans with AIDS. And it was not a word, not one sentence got out into the mainstream media. So just remember that the next time someone in the media, one of these smart alecks, who think they know everything, tell you, oh, well, there's no proof. Oh, we had lots of proof. Still have it. It's all up on my website. I got the press conference, the people, the Tony Brown Journal clips. It's all there. The protocols, it's all there. It just reminds me of what this guy from Oregon State University was doing. He was saying, let's change our diet. Okay, I agree, he is right. But why change it incrementally? Why not do a quantum change? Because the more I'm in the field and the more I'm working with sick people and emotionally disturbed people, the more I see that it is quantum change that is the ultimate way of helping people heal. And you can't do that just incrementally. You have to have the dominant energy be a healing energy, a happy energy, an empowering energy, a liberating energy, an open-minded energy, one that every single day re-acknowledges their right to think whatever they want, to do whatever they want in a positive way. And that's where we have missed the step, because we are ultra-conservative in our healthcare system. If you go to the average doctor and say, doctor, I have terminal cancer, I have AIDS, I have Alzheimer's, what should I do? Well, just, take these medicines, but everything in moderation. But I'm eating French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, sweet beverages with high fructose. Well, just in moderation. But I'm not doing a single thing that's healthy. But just in moderation. So I don't need to take vitamins. No, there's no evidence. But I heard there were 500,000 studies in the peer-reviewed journal. Have you not read them? No, it's not relevant. That's the feedback you get. It's time that we got in people's faces and said, we have the truth. You don't. We have the reality. You don't. Because we're talking about people's lives. And it's time that we become strongly proactive. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to do two segments back to back. And you'll know why in a moment. The first segment is just to show you how mind-numbingly stupid most people are. And then it makes sense, the second one about the topic of kneeling for the national anthem.
I'm a country that begins with U.
Yugoslavia?
With U, Utah.
A country that starts with a U.
Utopia.
Who's in the coalition of the willing?
No freaking idea.
Afghanistan, Kuwait.
Iraq, Pakistan, you know.
New Zealand?
New Zealand.
What's the religion of Israel?
Israeli.
Muslim.
Islamic?
Catholic, probably.
What religion are Buddhist monks?
Buddhist monks.
Buddhist monks.
Islamic, I don't know.
Who won the Vietnam War?
We did.
And who was...
Wait, were we even in the Vietnam War? Okay, good.
Who is Fidel Castro?
A singer.
How many sides does a triangle have?
Damn, four.
There's no sides. One.
What is the currency used in the United Kingdom?
What's the currency in the United Kingdom?
What is it?
In the United Kingdom, I don't know.
Possibly American money.
Queen Elizabeth money? That's all I know.
Name a country that begins with U.
A country?
Yeah. What about this one?
What?
The United States of America. In terms of the war on terror, who do you think should be the next country to invade?
Saudi Arabia.
Maybe somebody in the Middle East.
We'll make a big glass crater in the Middle East, for all I care.
I'm thinking Italy.
Italy?
Mm-hmm. Cuba.
Cuba?
Yeah.
Iran.
Iran? Why is that?
I think there's a revolution going on pretty soon.
Russia, China.
India and Pakistan.
Indonesia, Brazil.
Korea.
Korea?
Sure.
Yeah, why do you say that?
They're trouble.
They're trouble? Yep, okay. What's trouble about them?
Their attitude.
Canada.
Sri Lanka.
Right here.
Ah. Never heard of it.
Iran.
Iran? Yeah. Okay. All right, do I put a number one in Iran there?
South. Where are we? Oh.
Yeah. I'm thinking in.
Okay.
North Korea.
Why do you think North Korea?
Nuclear.
Nuclear?
Yeah.
Probably France.
France?
Because of the
allies.
They
were not
allies.
Put number two
on
France. Why
would
you say France? Yeah.
Oh, no, it just seemed to be some friction between France and the United States.
Where do you think the best place to invade Iran would be from? Think it'd be from the north or the south or the east or the west?
I think it'd be the east.
West.
Yeah. You know, and it's amazing because I just realized just now that North Korea is a lot larger than South Korea. I didn't know it was that large like that.
Kofi Annan is a drink, true or false?
Coffee's a drink.
Coffee and what?
It sounds like a laughter.
Yeah, who is Tony Blair?
I don't even know.
Okay. All right, any guess?
Skater?
Tony Blair is an actor.
Linda Blair's brother?
Which countries are in the axis of evil?
I know Germany's one of them. I'm not sure on the other ones.
Okay, California.
Yep.
New York.
Jerusalem.
Right.
Jerusalem.
Okay. There's more than one.
I think all of them.
Florida.
Okay. I'm a little bit mixed up over the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which one is throwing the rocks?
Oh, I can't think of the other name of the other one. The fellow with the turban thing, and I call it a diaper head, really.
And I believe Mississippi.
Who was the first man on the moon?
John Glenn.
Armstrong walked on the moon, but I think it was a Russian. I'm not sure.
Well, I got to tell you, some people don't believe that happened. They believe that was reincarnated in Arizona somewhere.
What is a mosque?
Don't have any idea.
You want to guess?
An animal.
I have no intelligent guess.
Okay, do you want to make a stupid guess? How many kidneys does a person have?
One.
What is collateral damage?
Well, they just made a film about it, but that's definitely not what it is. It probably has something to do with what the movie was about. but not necessarily related to the movie. Do you know what I mean?
How many world wars have there been?
Three.
Which state does KFC come from?
What, the chicken?
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay, do you know what KFC stands for?
Kentucky Fried Chicken, right?
Star Wars is based on a true story. True or false?
True.
What are Hiroshima and Nagasaki famous for?
What is it, Zudo wrestling?
How many Eiffel Towers are there in Paris?
I'd say about 10.
What is Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda is a group, suicide group in Israel, in the Middle East, that they do suicide bombs and stuff.
Okay, right, yep.
And the president of it is Yasser Arafat.
Right, yep.
Everybody knows that.
Okay.
Listen to my answer. Al-Qaeda is a wing of the Masonic Order.
Where was the Berlin Wall?
What is the main religion of Israel?
Muslim.
The language they speak in Latin America is Latin. True or false?
The what?
Believe me, I don't know the answer to this question, but I'm thinking.
Okay.
Israel?
I think you get the idea. So, let's just put this in perspective for a moment. That's all. We're expecting the very same people. These were all different people, by the way. And just stopped at random in New York City. So we're expecting these people to understand what politicians are stating and using as propaganda, the media as propaganda. They don't know the truth about history, geography. And by the way, when he was saying he had a map of the world, and he had Australia down the bottom right-hand corner, and they were all pointing to that as being Iran. Not a single person knew that Iran was in the Middle East. They said it was Australia. So now, exactly what are you supposed to rely upon these people to do? Involving global warming, creating a universal health care, getting money out of politics, de-ghettoizing America. What role are they supposed to play if they don't have just the basics down? That's something we don't discuss in our society. So then we get, but we're going to do two things back to back here that shows you why they're interconnected. So when it comes to why people shouldn't, you know, stand for the flag and the national anthem, there's two reasons. And Tom Hartman is going to give us the first. It's a short clip. Please listen.
And who I follow on Twitter, and if you don't follow Sean King on Twitter, do so. Sean King is brilliant. And he writes regularly for the New York Daily News. And he wrote this piece called Why I'll Never Stand Again for the Star-Spangled Banner. And I just want to share three paragraphs from Sean's piece about this. He says, first off, he's talking about the Star-Spangled Banner. He says, first off, the song, which was originally written as a poem, didn't become our national anthem until 1931, which was 117 years after Francis Scott Key wrote it. Most of us have no true idea what in the hell we've been hearing or singing all these years. But as it turns out, Key's full poem actually has a third stanza, which few of us have ever heard. In it, he openly celebrates the murder of slaves. Yes, really. It goes like this. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave, and the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. And then Sean King goes on to explain what that means. He says, while it's always been known that the song was written during American slavery and that when those words about this nation being the land of the free didn't apply to the millions who had been held in bondage, few of us had any idea that the song itself was rooted in the celebration of slavery and the murder of Africans in America who were being hired by the British military to give them strength, not only in the War of 1812, but in the Battle of Fort McHenry in 1814. These black men were called the Corps of Colonial Marines, and they served valiantly for the British military, and Francis Scott Key despised them. He was glad to see them experience terror and death in war to the point that he wrote a poem about it, and that poem is now our national anthem. While I fundamentally reject the notion that anyone who owned other human beings was either good, moral, or decent, Francis Scott Key left absolutely no doubt that he was a stone-cold bigot. He came from generations of plantation-owning bigots. Yeah, I don't call them plantations anymore. I call them concentration camps, but anyhow. They got wealthy off of it. Key, as district attorney of Washington, fought for slavery and against abolitionists every chance he got. Even when Africans in D.C. were injured or murdered, Francis Scott Key stood strong against justice for them. He openly spoke racist words against Africans in America. Key said that they were, quote, a distinct and inferior race of people, which all experience proves to be the greatest evil that afflicts a community, end quote. This is in the context of Colin Kaepernick.
So, it's not just about someone taking a knee and you feel they're not patriotic. Why don't you do a little history lesson? We share history all the time on this program, and people seem to appreciate it because it gives them a different perspective. But remember, Francis Scott Key was a total, complete racist. And if you send this over to Sean Hannity and to all the other radio hosts, let them hear it and then see what their perspective would be, knowing the truth. Will they stay the same or change? Finally, in this segment, do the rich want to keep us dumb? And if so, what methods are they using? Please listen to this segment. Then we're going to open this up for talkback, your opportunity to share your thoughts upon why we have dumbed ourselves down, either through the institutions. And by the way, many of the people who sound like complete illiterates are from college campuses. I took my own crew to New York University campus and to Columbia campus, and we interviewed probably 100 people on just basic questions, and 95% couldn't get even the basics correct. So what exactly are they learning in these schools? And that's just them in schools, college students. What about those who are not in college? So listen to this clip.
The intellectual elite.
Intellectual elite. Intellectual elite.
The intellectual elite. Know-it-all, academic, soy latte, vegan, complete the Saturday New York Times crossword puzzle, coastal, kale, intellectual elite. Why is intellectualism always equated with elitism? Maybe because in a time when facts don't matter and authority gets its strength from blind trust, knowledge isn't power, it's a problem. Maybe it's our puritanical roots, or maybe it's Fraser Crane. But Americans don't like intellectuals. That's why in American politics, not knowing much or appearing like you don't can be seen as a virtue. It shows that a politician is down to earth, relatable, someone you could have a beer with, or five beers with, or however many you had before you passed out and they drew a wang on your forehead. Anti-intellectualism is what made someone from one of the most elite families who graduated from one of the most elite universities appear to be of the people.
For those of you who received honors, awards, and distinctions, I say well done. And to the C students, you too can be president of the United States.
And then one day a war criminal. And of course, back then, no one could have imagined a more grotesque celebration of hawkish anti-intellectualism until the primaries of 2016.
We won with young, we won with old, we won with highly educated, we won with poorly educated. I love the poorly educated. We're the smartest people. We're the most loyal people.
And that's just it. Trump loves the poorly educated because they're loyal. Just like peasants or bagels or Eric. They don't know any better. The less educated you are, the less capacity you have to think for yourself. And the less capacity to think for yourself, the easier it is to blindly place your trust in authority. And Trump was right to love the poorly educated because he went on to win the election in large part thanks to voters without a college education. He vastly outperformed Clinton in the 50 least educated counties in the country, where people might not have minded a president who literally speaks at a fourth grade level. Trump's lack of adult vocabulary, or coherence, is part of the Republican brand, though, to distance themselves from the elite classes they are indeed a part of in order to gain the trust of the general public, who they ultimately plan to f*** over. And it's been happening for decades.
This is the issue of this election.
Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
Yeah, don't trust anyone who knows what they're doing. Trust the guy from Bedtime for Bonzo, whose brilliant economic plan is just his name with nomics on the end. And hear how Paul Ryan peddles the same anti-intellectualism today.
We do not believe that we should be governed by elites. We do not believe that there are experts or elites who should steer us in their preferred direction.
So good to hear you support regular folks, Paul. I'm sure the Medicare for All iron worker Randy Bryce will appreciate your endorsement for Wisconsin's 1st District. Oh, hey, isn't that your district? One way the right equates expert knowledge with elitism is by painting higher education as the enemy.
President Obama once said he wants everybody in America to go to college. What a snob.
Next, he'll want us all to have health care, and some of us don't want to have to wait 50 years to meet Jesus. But it's easy for the right to demonize higher education as elitist because college itself is so inaccessible. And instead of working to make it more accessible by lowering tuition and alleviating student debt, right-wingers make education even more expensive by gutting public schools in favor of expensive private ones. It's almost as if it's in some people's political interest to keep people poorly educated. I just described Betsy DeVos's job. Meanwhile, the GOP continues to parrot down-home working-class solidarity, which is mostly crap. For instance, that lunch that Santorum was speaking at was for Americans for Prosperity, the nonprofit group of libertarian Sith Lord billionaires, the Koch brothers, a group that regularly supports union busing and is vehemently against raising the minimum wage. Feel the solidarity. But please, go on, Rick.
They're good, decent men and women who go out and work hard every day and put their skills to test that aren't taught by some liberal college professor and trying to indoctrinate them.
And that, right there, is the second prong to the right's anti-intellectualism, painting higher education not just as elitist, but liberal.
Many universities are becoming bastions of liberal bias rather than institutions for higher learning.
There's a bias in favor of liberal points of view on campuses that are run by government.
It's a joke that these elite universities claim to be bastions of academic freedom when really they're only bastions of political correctness.
Yeah, to the right, universities are bastions of political correctness because there are lessons on the French Revolution, gender studies, and consent. So it's no wonder that after all this bashing of college, one out of three Americans now thinks that higher education does more harm than good. Also, one in four Americans believes the sun revolves around the earth, which probably means two out of three Americans think college gives you skin cancer. And it is true that adults that are more highly educated have more so-called liberal thoughts on social issues and the environment. Things like climate change is real and universal healthcare will help people, and other ideological nonsense, also known as facts. But the right combats these realities taught in universities by dismissing them all as simply overly sensitive political correctness that discriminates against conservative viewpoints. Take Charlie Kirk. This 24-year-old runs a group called Turning Point USA that professes so-called free speech on college campuses by, say, keeping a menacing list of liberal professors on its website. Listen to Kirk justify his campus crusade.
Look, a university is supposed to be a place where disagreement, the free flow of ideas happen,
right,
where people can say, I respect your opinion, but I respectfully disagree. Universities are no longer those places.
Time out. Charlie Kirk never actually went to college. Why would he? He's on Fox. Time in.
They are really islands of totalitarianism, where if you disagree with the faculty, the professors, the administration, or the left-wing students on campus, you can't respectfully disagree. You will be silenced, you will be suppressed, and you will be called a racist.
Or, Charlie, you will be called a racist because it turns out your organization is pretty f***ing racist. The thing is, Turning Point USA does exactly what Kirk imagines liberal universities are doing. Propaganda. He admits to taking money from fossil fuel interests and then working against fossil fuel divestment campaigns. In fact, the right as a whole has had a way bigger hand in university education than they let on. Since the 60s, right-wing think tanks and private family foundations have poured billions into universities to promote free market thinking. There's the Olin Foundation, which started the conservative Madison program at Princeton and has supported right-wing ideologues from Samuel, Muslims Can't Do Democracy, Huntington, to Dinesh, Welfare is Slavery, D'Souza. Or the Bradley Foundation, and it's...
So you get the idea. But here's the problem. Just as someone from the left could cascade those on the right and be fairly accurate, so could you also look at the left for its intolerance, its overabundance of ideas concerning identity politics, but doing nothing fundamental to change any of the problems in our society. Waking up each day angry at something or someone is not the same as constructively changing anything to empower the world, you and your neighbors, to make something sustainable. I'll just give you one little, relatively insignificant insight into this. Just one. Just take a look at the idea that almost all of the money that we need for universal health care, feeding the hungry, de-ghettoizing America, replanting forests, rebuilding our infrastructure, we could get that in 1 year if we simply stop the military-industrial complex. And yet the majority of Democrats voted for a $700 billion above line, and there's another $700 billion below line for about a $1.4 trillion that the military-industrial complex is going to get. And that's completely unnecessary. Any audit would show you, there are even foundations, Governmental Accountability Project, that the vast majority of money that the government makes from taxpayers, it spends on things that do not benefit taxpayers. So, and every single member of the Senate, every single member, not one dissension, signed a pledge to Israel that it will support Israel no matter what. And as a result, when there's a massive destruction of innocent lives, they're unarmed, some are throwing rocks, but the rest are way back from a border that was their land at one time, and the legislators will not condemn it. No one will talk about it. It's as if the media doesn't want to touch this. But then ask any legislator, when was the last time you went to the West Bank or Gaza? When was the last time you sat down with a Palestinian family and just had a conversation with them about what's it like not to have clean water or electricity? What's it like to see your children suffer from malnutrition or police break in the middle of the night and take your 10-year-old boy, put him in prison? What's that like? But our media won't do it. Now, outside the media, you have people who do it. Medea Benjamin will do it. Cynthia McKinney will do it. But none of our legislators will do it, left or right. And then there's the little case of 40 major issues that we discuss on the show. Yesterday, you heard me ask a man, yes or no, I don't want political talk back, professor of constitutional law running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Florida. And I asked him, yes or no, would you? And he said, yes, on everyone. Would you completely get rid of these 900-plus military bases around the world? Yes. Universal health care? Yes. Legalized drugs? Yes. Expunge all records of all people who are in prison for using drugs? Yes. And then other things as well. Getting the Glass-Steagall Act back? Yes. And getting rid of money and financing, private financing, elections? Yes, et cetera. There are 40 questions. Not a single one of those questions is being addressed in any meaningful way by either Democrats or Republicans, left or right. Yet everybody knows about Stormy Daniels. In fact, over the last 3 weeks, Stormy Daniels has had a day named after her. And, you know, this is Stormy Daniels Day. I believe it was in Los Angeles because the mayor, let's see, now this is not a contradiction, I don't think. He settled a sexual harassment suit for that the city paid for about $88,000 a year or two before. In any case, that's irrelevant. But he makes it Stormy Daniels Day. And then all these people on CNN, these women on CNN are saying she empowers people. She's a model for young girls. Okay. Everyone agrees. There's absolutely no discussion. Stormy Daniels is the new role model, the new face of feminist, the new voice of women's empowerment. Everything that a young girl should be. End of thought. Well, maybe just a little tiny irrelevant add-on to this. Let's break it down. Stormy Daniels agreed to have sex unprotected one time with a famous person. She later talked about how she didn't enjoy it, but it was consensual. Okay. Then later, years later, when this person was going to become president or in final days, she goes out to sell her story. That's opportunism. Now, that should be a virtue taught in every school. Take advantage of anything you can over anyone, and especially good if you have something on the person you could use against them, some form of blackmail or extortion, always good, or something that you could embarrass the person by. Whatever your ultimate motive, it's your business. It's your right to do that, right? We want all people to do that because we don't condemn it in her. So she took advantage. And then, of course, the president came in, and he, through his lawyer, gave her, $150,000? Wow. What exactly was the $150,000 for? Was it for the sex or not talking about the sex? I see. If it was for the sex, that would be the most expensive sex I could ever imagine anyone paying for. Wow. And then she should write a book. You know, you too can be a $150,000, you know, sex expert. But let's say it wasn't for the sex. Sex had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. But it was for, well, not telling the world. I see. So there's an element of integrity here. People with integrity, if they share something with you, more often than not, if they have integrity or ethics, they will keep that to themselves, especially if you've done nothing against that person. So that's opportunism. So then she has a non-disclosure agreement, but now she's got the money, but she says, ah, I can make more money off this. And because he didn't sign it. So now you use a technicality to continue the exploitation and the self-serving interest, and you get all this media attention. Okay, and there's women now who say, go for it. All right, good. Let's say you're the average person, the average parent, and you say, Mom, Dad, I appreciate the fact that you put me through college. You have about $70,000 in bills to pay. I don't want to be a physician or psychologist, architect or engineer. I want to be a porn star. And the family is going to say, of course, especially if they're watching CNN or MSNBC, they're going to say, go for it. It's your body. You have a right to. It's your freedom. And we support you. We are a village, and villages always support the person. In fact, I'm so proud of what I'm going to do. I know that my brother here, Bobby, who's 2 years younger, Mom and Dad, I know our aunts and uncles. I was going to save this for Thanksgiving meal where I could tell everyone, but I'm going to make it even easier. I'm going to invite you all on set free, so you don't have to pay anything. You don't have to see the movie later, and you can watch how it's actually done, the art of it. In fact, I'm starting a hashtag group, Why Can't Porn Actresses Be Qualified for the Academy Awards? And Mom, you told me I'm perfect, and I get an award for just showing up, so why don't we have best anal, best oral, best in every position, awards and actors? Because let's face it, some of the greatest actors and actresses in American history started in porn. I think I read that somewhere. Isn't that true? No? Okay. But it should be, we shouldn't leave them out, right? We don't want anyone to have hurt feelings. So yes, let's make them part of the Academy Awards. And yeah, how would that go down? How would that go down? Oh, and did I forget the fact, again, it's completely insignificant. Let's just, nothing here to see, let's go on. We're praising a woman and giving a woman a forum who participated in adultery. I guess that's the new virtue. He was married, she was not. She knew he was married, but it didn't matter to her. So a person that exploits a situation, hammers it to her advantage, gets as much money as she can, and betrays another human being who now is suffering through the humiliation of realizing that her husband, in name only here, betrayed her while she was with her young son. Wow, wonderful character qualities. Yep. Now you see how all these things connect together today. Final thoughts from Jeff from New Jersey. Hi, Jeff. Your turn. You're on the air.
How are you doing, Gary? Well, right. I said, how you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Hello? All right. I experienced a thing with my daughter in school, and they were given a math problem that they didn't have to find the right answer to. And that's kind of idiotic, since math is the only science that has an exact that's an exact science, actually. So you need to find the right answer. But what I find, though, it adds to confusion to the kid. It also lends to people kind of giving up. If you're not good at math, how do you balance your checkbook? And then how, therefore, you end up with a situation where, like in a comedic situation, where they say one for me, one for you, one, two for me, two for you, five for me, one, two, three, four, five, you know, so et cetera, et cetera. So you end up with a situation where they can steal from you. And every single situation, social situation, has a mathematical equation to it. So when you're not able to add up math with numbers, you're also not able to add up the situation. You're not able to connect one thing to another because you will not have a sequence to work with. You know, nothing at you, you know, the foundation is 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 2. Yes.
Jeff, you've made a very important point. I appreciate that. But then ask yourself this, how many people today, millennials and others, actually do any checking of their checkbook, any balance, when someone else is there to pay the bills, and all you have to do is spend the money, and you've got 108 million people who don't have to look at a balance, they just spend. Millionaires, you got 10 million of them, plus family, that's 40 million, and professional class that try to live like millionaires through debt, you've got 17.2 million of them. That's up to 112 million Americans don't really have to look at the balance of anything because they can always buy something more by using debt. And young people today, they don't have to be responsible for the debt. Someone else is going to pay for it. That's the reality of the world we live in. But now ask yourself, would you want to hire someone at NASA who's going to be a flight engineer who does no math, or an architect who does no math, or building engineer who does no math, or an economist who does no math? Well, Alan Greenspan didn't know math, quantum math. The answer is no. But that's what happens when we adapt, maladapt, to the standard at the lowest end of the human equation. That's why I played the clip earlier in today and showed you how dangerous a critical thinking educated mind is. Because people who understand history, understand sociology, economics, understand comparative religion, understand the ecology, understand nutrition, understand the dynamics of foreign policy, that is a dangerous mind because it's not going to be easily influenced by tricksters, manipulators, and propagandists. I appreciate your input, Jeff. Thank you very much. And for all of you for listening, I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day.
A one, a two, a one, two, three.